Farah Jasmine Griffin, professor of English and comparative literature and African American studies at Columbia University. Among her books, If You Can't Be Free, Be a Mystery, In Search of Billie Holiday. And Mark Anthony Neal, Duke University professor, author of many books. And that does it for our show as we go out with respect. Democracy Now! Is a job opening for a broadcast engineer here in New York City. Find out more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Robbie Caron, Laura Gottesdien, or Carla Wills. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. Coming up next on Positively Revolting, Ani and Teresa take your calls.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted.
This is Cat Meow.
And this is Becky.
And we want to hang out with you.
The Development Committee will meet the third Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m.
We're traffic informed and
food motivated.
And we're seeking like-minded individuals who want to use their rad fundraising skills and talents to
support the station. Join us.
Join us.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society's new concert season, which starts September 21st of this year and runs through May of 2019, all staged at the Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland. The Portland Folk Music Society is pleased to present a lineup of national and regional artists, including Molly O'Brien and Rich Moore, the Kathy Kallick Band, the Honey Whiskey Trio, Legends of the Celtic Harp with Patrick Ball, True North, Tish Hinojosa, Pat Donahue, Nina Gerber and Chris Webster, and Dave Stamey. And for the first time, the Portland Folk Music Society is offering season ticket packages at prices below single show rates, either online or at the door. For more information, go to the website kboo.fm and look on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
And good morning, good morning. The time is just about 4 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are tuned to your very own community radio station, KBOO Portland. This is Positively Revolting, and I'm Ani.
I'm Teresa.
And Teresa, thank you once again for joining me.
Cheers.
In Positively Revolting this morning. Teresa is the host of Press Watch airing Thursday mornings on KABU at 9 o'clock. And I'm just tickled that you have the time and gumption to come back today and fairly much, you know, continuing a conversation that you started yesterday on your show, because I really think that we cannot talk about this enough. And that is the, I'm going to go ahead and say, kind of shocking interview that Chief Outlaw did with Lars Larson earlier this week. It's picked up in Willamette Week as well. And, you know, basically, one of the things that I'm finding really shocking about it is the level of candor that Outlaw is displaying. Certainly not the attitude in it. The attitude I'm totally used to. But the level of frankness, the perhaps honesty, I'm a little shocked by. And I think unnerved by, because, well, the honesty says that we don't find anything wrong with this and you can expect more of the same. And that is basically the headline for Willamette Week's article, quotes Chief Outlaw. I'm just going to go ahead and read the article. It says it very well. Portland Police Chief says protesters went off to whine and complain, that's a quote, last week because officers, and now I quote again, kicked your butt. Right. So, you know, she's talking about police actions that actually sent two counter-protesters, people that were there to, you know, speak out loudly against white supremacy and fascism and hate groups. And the police, in their actions, sent two of those counter-protesters to the hospital with serious injuries caused by flashbang grenades. So the chief is basically likening this to a schoolyard fight, saying more or less that Antifa and counter-protesters basically called for a police confrontation, and the police showed up, gave it to them in kind, and now they're whiny. Excuse me, what? Since when is it okay for a chief of police to actually characterize the police as engaging in a schoolyard brawl to teach somebody a lesson? Right? What does that mean? And what does that mean for the future of dissent? It means that we actually have to be organized in countering this narrative, and you know, people need to loudly speak out against this attitude. And I'm going to go ahead and quote again from the article. And I want to thank Willamette Week, and I want to thank Katie Shepherd for writing this article. And again, I quote, "I tell you, meet me after school at 3 o'clock, right? We're going to fight," Outlaw said, setting up an analogy to describe how she feels her critics are acting, her critics being social justice activists, Antifa activists, anti-fascists, and basically good-thinking Portlanders. She says, "So then I come with the intention to fight, and then you get mad because I kicked your butt, and then you go back and you wail off and whine and complain." Again, the police sent two protesters to the hospital with serious injuries. I'm pretty sure that many of you are have seen, are familiar with the photograph of the flashbang grenade that has pierced a bicycle helmet. That if the protester was not wearing that bicycle helmet, one could pretty much make a safe assumption that their injuries would have been devastating, oh, yeah, potentially
off,
fatal.
Tore off part of the skull.
Yeah.
I tore off part of the scalp, I mean, and hit the skull.
And that's with the bicycle helmet. So that, again, the attitude that Outlaw is showing there, I find absolutely unconscionable. So there's that. I also, in further shenanigans of the Portland police, want to point out some headlines that came and went. And that is the criminalization of the houseless, of poverty in general, but specifically in Portland, of the houseless community. There's some articles came out last month that showed statistically half the arrests in Portland made last year were of homeless people. So what does that mean? It's houseless folks that are targeted. It's houseless folks that are criminalized for doing exactly the same things folks with houses do, but folks with houses have houses and so are not susceptible to the scrutiny and are not forced to do things like, deal with bodily needs outside because, wow, you know, those with houses, we have bathrooms and we don't have to beg and plead for keys or locked security codes to try to actually relieve ourselves. Let's check that out. Let's check out the fact that calling the police at this point is a lot of folks, and I'm mostly going to say it's a lot of folks' answer to, wow, I'm a little uncomfortable right now. I'd better call the police. And what does that say?
I think that Chief Outlaw characterizing the confrontation of the Patriot Prayer and Proud Boy supremacists coming into town, white supremacists, the defense against the white supremacists was not a contest versus the police. It takes on aspects of that, but we kind of count on our officials to look beyond, you know, the occasional testosterone-pumped kid and the provocateurs who are going to and the justifiable, I think, anger of the crowd, insulted and confronted and frightened by the fact that these fascists are being given a special pass to come into town after, you know, boasting about their armament. We count on our officials to see what is actually happening, which is because the police and because the mayor and the system generally failed and let these terrorists into town, we were forced to defend ourselves, and so we created a nonviolent crowd. We had defensive shields. Some of us had helmets. Some people put masks on their face because of the history of police targeting dissent. And apparently opposing a confrontation by white supremacists is now viewed as dissent, and that's alarming. And so then Chief Outlaw said what she said, and it says a lot about her attitude. And I really want to do a reductio on the idea that the anti-fascists were there to have a contest with police. I mean, if the police are going to take that attitude and put on their armor and have their little fireworks guns and their chemical weapons and all that stuff, then it's going to take aspects of that on. That's going to happen. But that's not what it was about. It was about expressing our disgust and our outrage. It was about petitioning our government for redress of grievances. And if it were not, then how far would it go? I mean, we have to confront these fascists with their known history, their blooded history. We have to confront the police with their history and all of their armament on and all their helmets and their face shields and their radios and their whole contraption going against us, turned against us. And if that were not bad enough, we have Chief Outlaw saying that it's a contest, really, in a town that's chock full of Vietnam veterans and Iraqi combat veterans and Afghan combat veterans. You want to have a contest? What would it be like if they went down to the National Guard Armory and took you on with what they know how to do with some mortars and snipers? I don't think you'd do all that well, and you don't really want a contest, do you? So I think it's time to back down from that kind of rhetoric and really parse the attitude of the city government right now towards dissent generally. If it weren't for dissent, you wouldn't have a sane or usable society.
Absolutely. So really what I'm looking at is looking at the criminalization of dissent and looking at the criminalization of poverty, the criminalization of houselessness, and how all of these things sort of act together to tighten a net of fear and insecurity around the population. To, for folks that are not really paying close attention, the need to just go along to get along, support the status quo, keep your head down, always carry one end of the banner. That's what Winston says in 1984. To make sure that they're safe and they're just going to be fine And they're not like those people out there that are probably rightly being targeted by the police because they are a threat to their comfort and therefore their safety, right? And so it is how to also reach those folks. How do we do that? Because we need everyone to actually be active in the fight against fascism. We need everyone to start understanding root causes of houselessness and actual humane, compassionate, and I'm going to say effective ways of dealing with poverty and houselessness. I also want to talk about, if you're interested in talking about, basic universal basic wage. How can we actually just make sure that we have a safety net in this country? And why are the powers that be so against this idea, right? So let's talk about all of these things. We have Linda joining us, and I'm going to give that phone number out. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. That's 503-231-8187. Good morning, Linda. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Ani. Good morning, Teresa. Thanks for the morning. Show. I wanted to say that, you know, you've stated these facts, but I wanted to put them all together, which is that we have a police force that 25 of are assigned to gang enforcement, and 90% of their encounters with the public were harassing young men of color, especially yeah. African-American men. And then we have the 50% of normal policing arrests are of homeless people or houseless people, basically harassment of the most vulnerable people in our community. And then we have our new chief come out with those outrageous statements.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, about her statements, I think they're so revealing of her attitude, because clearly she was saying we, the overwhelming majority of overwhelming majority of who were completely peaceful, came for a fight.
Yeah.
And what'd the other side come for? Because we came for a peaceful protest. What'd they come for? And we all know how armored up and weaponed up they were. And
we were forced to be ready for a fight.
Yeah, and when I was down there, it was so obvious that the police had already chosen sides, because they lined the street with their backs to the fascists, facing us with their armor and their weapons. And within 15 minutes of our group reaching the waterfront, were declaring us we had to move because they had seen, quote, weapons in our hands.
Well, let me ask
you
this.
This is a fascist police.
Yeah.
Right.
And let me ask you this. Do you think that this is happening because we're getting in the way of their Jim Crow?
Well, I think it's because they want to crush all dissent, and it might be because they want to get in the way of our Jim Crow. But we have to remember that Wheeler and others selected this woman to be our police chief, and I was wondering when we would see, you know, the harsher hand of her. And obviously we've seen it, and with no restraint, and her attitude about normal protesters as basically, you know, criminal elements who came for a fight, and her police fought us, is so revealing. I wanted to say that they've been asking for more money for our police force, and I think we need to say, on the basis of those three things, the gang enforcement, the arrests made by the regular police, and now this absolutely out of control chief of police, is not one more cent for the police in this city until the whole thing's turned over upside down. Not one more cent for oppressors in uniform here.
That,
I think that needs to be our battle cry. Not one more cent.
That absolutely, you know, needs to be said. I mean, it kind of reminds me a little of the Inquisition, right? Where those
yeah.
accused had to pay for, you know, the inquisitors, their, you know, they had to pay for their own torture, and they had to pay for their own sticks of wood to actually ignite, to burn them. We're kind of heading straight into that, and I just got to put that out there. Thank you, Linda, for that really astute summing up, and for your call to not give the police any more resources to oppress us.
Yeah, we have to outright say who they are, because the people injured weren't even necessarily Antifa, and And I didn't see any Antifa doing anything illegal anyway, and I was there up until the very last hour. I got kind of overheated and couldn't continue past that. But I know what from what I've heard after that, that nobody has any evidence that our side threw anything or did anything to provoke that. What they had started announcing, they were going to march on us with non-lethal weapons within 15 minutes of the beginning of our reaching the riverfront, and we were completely and totally peaceful chanting at that point. So we know who they are, we know what their role is, and we have to make it public, loud, and clear. These are oppressors of the people. That's what their job has become, and we're paying for them with dollars. We pay for them.
Absolutely. 503.
Not one more cent.
Thank you, Linda.
All right, well, thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning. 503-231-8187. And, you know, it to me, again, we have to look. Portland has this wonderful reputation, right? Some of it's deserved, some of it ain't. And it's really, I think, important to remove all blinders and actually see something that is happening. And that is this sanctuary city of liberal, progressive whatnotism. As long as you're white and middle class, or, you know, of higher class. Then what we have is this beautiful sanctuary city giving permits to people who are espousing hateful white supremacist ideologies because, well, you know, free speech. And then we have the cops coming in to absolutely defend and protect them while they attack us. And by us, I do mean people who are going to decry white supremacy and say not in our town. And then we have the police chief just a week later saying, yeah, well, they were spoiling for a fight, so we kicked their butt. Now they got to just accept that. What does that all add up to, right? That's what I would really like to talk about this morning. Thank you, Linda, for getting that ball rolling. 503-231-8187. Good morning, Ross. You are on the air. Good morning, Ross. Perhaps you have stepped away for just a moment. 503-231-8187 is that number to call. Also, to let you know, you can follow along throughout the week on Facebook. You can find us Positively Revolting or in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. Good morning, Ross. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, let me start by asking, do you have any suggestions as to how the police should have acted there when they had, well, were obviously two sides coming together and with almost certain intention or acceptance of having a little violence?
Well, I was there, Ross.
How should the police have come down with... in their suit coats and maybe carrying Bibles?
Well, there's
something.
A couple... Let me,
any idea?
Sure. Yeah, let me actually respond to that. I wasn't there. I'll just go ahead and put that... I had a commitment a year standing, so I was not there. But I'm going to go ahead and say, as a thinking person, seeing the helmet with the projectile that basically made it through and would have more than likely killed the person had they not been wearing a bike helmet while walking around, that you don't aim for the head of peaceful protesters while you are expending military-grade weapons. That's one thing, right? I'm not asking for suit coats and Bibles. I'm not asking for the police to come down there in that way that you are painting it. No, but I am asking for them not to try to kill us and then not to gloat about it in the press a week later. Teresa was there. What'd you see, Teresa?
Well, Ross, the police did the right thing for a while. There was a confrontation. The white supremacists were all corralled in the park. There really weren't that many of them. The numbers saying that there were 400 of them were exaggerated. That was 400 of people confronting them. But anyway, so they had their little group there, and the police were between us there, and they stood on NATO Avenue. And the crowd marched towards the Patriot Prayer. The police stood between us, and everything was fine. We yelled at Patriot Prayer. They yelled back. We vented, they vented, we expressed our opinion, they expressed our opinion, everything was fine. Then the police told the anti-fascists to disperse, which was ridiculous because not a stone had been thrown. It was a peaceful demonstration. Then the police attacked the anti-fascists. That's the fact. It's backed up by all the video. And as I said, I was there. So my request for the police, they were doing a good job until they decided to do the wrong thing.
Okay, and when you do the wrong thing, you don't get on Lars Larson a week later and say, you asked for it, we brought it, so there. That's immature at best. And that's our police chief.
Okay.
Any other things, Ross?
The only thing I know, I heard this program on the day before the thing, and I recall that you had interviewed with Antifa, and
that was a week before.
A number of Antifa. The Antifa people do not. They overtly say they don't pretend to have any solidarity with the left, and they're kind of picked up as we should be followers of Antifa. I've never heard of a single demonstration that Antifa's initiate, but they decorate our demonstrations.
I don't think you've actually listened to those shows. Ross, let me respond for a moment. Antifa doesn't call demonstrations. They are there to counter fascism. That is their job.
Not be their intention.
That would be your opinion. I would have to say wrong. Yeah. But if you'd actually listen to those interviews, you would understand that it is not their focus nor job. They do not consider it their responsibility to call protests. That's not what they do. They are community defense.
Teresa had a terrific interview with some of the... Hello, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Teresa
and you're still
there
too.
Interview with some of the right-wingers, and half of them said they came down to attack the Antifa people. If the Antifa people weren't planning on going there, the Antifa people managed to be simply the decoration for the right wing. If without the Antifa coming on, the right wing would be about half the size.
I have to counter that because
we think you're wrong.
The Patriot Prayer the Proud Boys go around in groups and beat people of color and GLBTQIA. That's why the Antifa are there, is to try to prevent that or to reduce it.
And remember that the Patriot Prayer people were gathering from across the country here in Portland, right? That they had come from all over to have a showdown in Portland, and then they were taking that on the West Coast. And it was showdown with Antifa. It was not a showdown with Antifa. It's a showdown to say, listen, might makes right. It's a year on since the murderous actions in Charlottesville. And we are here. We are getting stronger. And you people that aren't white and straight and with us, be on the watch because we are here and we are out for you. That is the message that they are sending very, very strongly in these coordinated actions up and down the West Coast. That is, I gotta say, good reason to think about community self-defense. The violence that they commit against marginalized people in these cities as they are gathering doesn't go largely reported in the mainstream news, right? These things
do happen.
I
don't like that the right wing, so I agree entirely with that. That's not the problem.
What's the problem?
Is whether you want to go to a demonstration with Antifa and people with black masks being your protectors or not. I just think it's a big mistake. But at any rate, I'll let you...
You ever been gay-bashed?
I support the police chief. I think she spoke really well.
Ross, I'm gonna get back a couple different things. Have you ever been targeted by a hate group because of your demographic?
Oh God, yes. I've been hated. I've been in jail and I've been beaten up. And come on, you don't need to.
And for what reason?
Pretend that I'm a naive.
Are you gay, Ross?
Hello?
Yeah, it's a serious question because I have been targeted as a queer person. I have been beaten as a queer person.
Well,
right?
You know, the opinions can be separate from our experience, but yes, I was in jail in Mississippi.
For what?
And I was beaten up and I was...
So you were beaten in jail, and I'm sorry that you had that experience, but I'm talking about...
I'm not the only one. I've been in jail about five times.
But I'm talking about being targeted by hate groups. Because you are of a demographic that they are not tolerant of. And to say then that people are coming together...
I'm an end lover.
So to say that people are coming together to defend communities
they're
that are targeted.
They're not defending my community. They're
they are totally defending mine.
They're time for a revolution now. That there's some more progressive consciences today than ever, and instead of paying attention to that, we get diverted by this small group of right-wing weirdos.
Okay, thanks, Russ. Carry on. Yeah, I would like us not to be diverted by a small group of right-wing weirdos, but when that small group is gaining power, and when they have a demagogue sitting in the highest office in this land that is amping them up and dog whistling away, and that dog whistle is getting lower and lower, right? It's now at a frequency that most of us can hear. That's a dangerous situation. And when you got the police chief actively saying that, yeah, you know, she said, well, she's not on Lars Larson to define who a terrorist group is, when Lars suggests that Antifa may fit that definition. Well, she's not there to really define that. But, you know, if they're going to bring trouble, she's going to come and respond to kick their butts.
Yeah. Well,
and again, got to say, this is a big picture that we need to pay attention to. It is a hard swing towards fascism.
I'm a clockable tranny. You can tell I'm a tranny. And sometimes I get away with it. I keep my mouth shut. But I was standing there on the sidewalk on the, that would be the west side of NATO Parkway with the Antifa. I had already gone over and interviewed the Patriot Pair boys, although I lost that recording. And I had my my mic rig, and I stood behind Antifa who had made a large tarp poster, and behind the poster were rectangles of plywood with handles on them, and they marched in line and they held that giant shield between me and the cops, and that's why I was able to get the recording to KBOO and broadcast what had actually happened there, including an assault by Patriot Prayer and Proud Boy types with a vehicle and with gas. Years ago, I was attacked by members of the Portland police, and they charged me with attacking them, and I would have done 10 years if it weren't for the fact that they were on their video screens chatting with each other saying, would you like to take down a tranny with me? So I'm very grateful to Antifa because I am not protected by the police, quite the opposite. The police have made themselves my enemy. So when I go down to just about any demonstration, I see Antifa. It cheers me because I know that there are at least some sincere people out there doing what they can to allow freedom of expression. Certainly, I can't say that for the Portland police.
Yep. Universal Energies, whatever you are, bless Antifa. And good morning to Bob. Bob, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
So I had a question / observation, and I'll just toss it out there and I can take my answer off the air. So it strikes me that a lot of the people who are Portland police actually don't live in Portland, primarily because they can't afford to live in Portland. So when they get off work, they retreat out to the exurbs and the suburbs, places that are probably pretty traditionally sort of antagonistic toward progressive ideals. And then they come into work each day, and they're having to face an environment that they find really rather reprehensible. I'm wondering, what do you think about that? Do you think that that's a valid observation?
I have heard that a significant number of Portland police, and I don't know what the current statistic is, but a significant number of Portland police do not actually live in Portland. I've always felt like that is a huge problem. I'm also going to say that the base salary for Portland Patrol ranges from $52,000 to $61,000 a year.
But that doesn't reflect what they really get because they have all these side jobs which are allowed by special provisions of Portland law.
And
so
then
they pull
also,
in more like $100,000.
And then there's also overtime, which you can sign up for, and all this stuff. So I'm going to say it's not because of economic reasons. I can still somehow, by the skin of my teeth, live in Portland, though I make, let's say, far less than that as an employee of KABU. So that, you know, it's not an economic reason. So I think that you're probably onto something with idealistic reasons, reasons of ideology and comfort. And I think it is a huge problem when most of a city's police force lives someplace else. That's more right. Like, you know, you're bringing in the guards to, you know, it's not a good look. And thank you for bringing up that
the feeling is, yeah, I think you're onto something there. You come into the war zone.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you going to do in the big city today? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that certainly doesn't excuse the behavior, but it's one of those things that I've noticed. And it seems to me that it's something that we need to talk about, that in addition to this just basic antagonism, there's this idea, as you put it, I think so eloquently, that they're coming into the war zone, that they see this as hostile environment anyway. So that just magnifies these entrenched ideas that it's the us versus them. So that idea that they're living outside of this work environment, I think is I would like to hear us talk about that more.
But yeah,
thank you very much for letting me to share that.
Thanks, Bob. 503-231-8187. Oh, Bridget, we're sorry that you had to not hold. Please call back. And then let's go ahead and talk to Jeff. Good morning, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi. What's up?
About previous caller, I think two calls back, who was basically just saying, you know, we should not bring attention to these fascist groups that, you know, go out and do their spiel. And, you know, we would do that at our own peril.
Yeah.
And history already shows this. And we have to get out there and resist every single time. I'm in my 60s. I'm a business owner in Portland. I do not like to see fascists in power, not only in my country, but certainly not in my city and state. And I'll be out there fighting them every chance I get. And I think that anybody who believes that if we ignore them, they'll just go away, they do so at our peril as a nation. And that's all I got to say.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You know, this has also been said of Trump. If we just quit talking about every dumb tweet that falls from his fingertips, if we just quit paying so much attention, his narcissistic personality would just sort of shrivel and he would have less power. And we could move on and do more positive things with our time. You know, there's a part of me that wants to believe that, because it would be easier to ignore these horrors that are erupting around us. But when the stakes are this high, when the Proud Boys and other hate groups are actively committing acts of violence within our communities, targeting people of color, targeting trans women of color, targeting women, it's absolutely perilous to ignore that. When Trump's demagoguery whips up that demographic into its murderous frenzy, it is perilous to ignore that.
Well, I would say that this, because of the, in part because of the things that the police chief says, we're guaranteed to see more confrontations like this, because this was a national mobilization. Alex, what's his name? InfoWars.
Yeah, Alex Jones. Thanks. I wasn't sure which Alex you're going for there, Therese.
Alex Jones pumped the confrontation in Portland, and he still, you know, despite the fact that he's been denied platforms, he still has his faithful followers and his national shows. So we had not just the Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer, but we had just outright Klan and Nazi types coming from as far away as Arkansas. And as far as they're concerned, this was a great victory and a grand time, and they'll be back. So we've been presented with this dynamic and with a police chief, and I have to say police chief and mayor that are encouraging it. So it's just going to keep happening. And under those circumstances, what have we got? If we don't have Antifa, what do we have?
I think that we have an opposed fascism rampaging in the streets.
Which is the idea. I mean, the idea is to punish Portland for its perceived progressiveness. And underlying all of this is maintaining white hegemony and maintaining the the hierarchy and the use of exclusion. I mean, whiteness is about exclusion, and that includes poverty. I mean, the main target, I suppose, of whiteness is all people of color, but especially blacks. And the figure is 7-1 in every aspect. 7-1 times the oppression against blacks by whites in this country, and the end result is economic conditions that are just appalling. And it's been going on for so long, I don't know where to start, but I could go back to the GI Bill, which black Americans were functionally excluded from. The first 67,000 mortgages insured by the GI Bill, fewer than 100 were taken out by non-white people. That was a huge... The GI Bill was... that was part of my life. That was a huge step up for my dad. He managed to... I mean, under the GI Bill, he was able to go to college and be paid for going to college. He had money coming in while he was going to college, and the college was paid for, and the books were paid for. A tremendous leg up. And as it, you know, was applied intentionally, a tremendous leg up to Jim Crow. It was a tremendous leg up for white people, and it was a kick down for everyone else because of the exclusions.
Right. And so, and I think it's important to recognize that that is not ancient history, right? So one of the things that kind of makes me a little upset when we talk about racist structure of our society, when we talk about systemic oppression and systemic racism, and people say, but I don't got nothing to do with that. Actually, just check. You do. Because, in fact, of the reasons Teresa has just mentioned.
Yeah, you can't be neutral on a moving Titanic.
Nice twist there, Teresa. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Chris, you are on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you very much for having this conversation. This event that went down on August 4th has been deeply, deeply disturbing to me as a community member to see what happened, you know, and to gain the perspective that our police force supported an armed militia from outside of the city to come in and commit violence against people of the city. Very, very disturbing to me.
Yeah.
And I've been really troubled by it in the weeks since. So I'm really glad that we're having this conversation.
It seems like a conversation that needs to happen over and over again, because it is so shocking.
Some point that I wanted to bring up, because we had a gentleman a few minutes ago saying, well, what did you think the police should have done?
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have a response to that. I definitely have an idea of what they should have done. My understanding of the situation was that the Patriot Prayer Group was permitted to gather in the waterfront park.
Uh-huh.
And we know that they were armed because they said so. They flat out said, we always bring guns to all of our rallies, and we're especially bringing guns and armed guards to this rally. So we know that we have an armed group in the park. Now, we know also the police have admitted that their weapons checkpoint that they set up was mostly a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a huge contingent of people outside that never went through the checkpoint. They just simply stood outside the checkpoint and then waited. And then when the group left the park, they entered the streets of Portland. Now, at that point, that's when the police should have shut all of this down. They should have said, no, you cannot leave the park. We know that you're armed. We know that you're looking to instigate violence. This stops now. Get back on your bus and leave. And that's absolutely not what the police did. The police let this group, with their weapons, violate the city ordinance pertaining to loaded firearms in the city, and just let them walk out and occupy city streets and essentially take over city streets with guns. And that's where my horror started, was seeing this, that the cops just let an armed mob assume control of city streets.
Yeah.
Which, and I think I want to double down on that and say, yeah, it definitely did happen. There's videos of it, and I actually witnessed it myself.
Yeah, I've been reposting pictures and videos, everything I can find, of this mob standing in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that Antifa, not just Antifa, I hate to say that, I'm sorry, I understand a coalition of Portland people, including Antifa and other groups, opposed this march. Since the police wouldn't stop it, and they were determined to let an armed mob walk the streets, than the people that stepped up and said, nope, we don't approve of this, we're not going to let you in. And then at that point, we know what happened. The police attacked their own people and then let the mob go, have a little march through a few blocks with their guns and with their shields and with their bats and with their bear spray, and do whatever they happen to do, which there's video evidence also of them attacking people and swarming people, and the police are nowhere to be seen. You know, it's appalling. It's really appalling. And again, that's my whole point I want to make, is there's definitely a major step that the police could have done to change this whole course of events on the weekend, and they chose not to. They sanctioned it and allowed it to happen, and then actually basically stood there and said, no, you guys just stand back, we've got this. And then they unleashed grenades and tear gas and, you know, pepper balls and a barrage on their own people. And as the PP group, as I like to call them, just kind of stood back and cheered and laughed. And again, it's just appalling. And yeah, I think that's the narrative that people need to be aware of. And I'm very disappointed about the false narrative that, oh, well, Antifa threw rocks and bottles, which there's absolutely no evidence of.
Yeah.
In fact, there's tons of evidence to the contrary.
And the police chief has directly lied about that.
And there's some really interesting footage that came up from a citizen cell phone where the cops seemed to charge the counter demonstrators the moment, or let's say 30 seconds after. There's some audio where you can hear them saying, oh, is that one of our cruisers back there?
Yeah.
Oh, we got to go get our cruiser out of that crowd. So apparently cracking some heads is all worth it if you realize that you've just left your car parked someplace where your boss is going to get angry with you because it might get damaged.
And it shows the priorities of the police department.
Absolutely
too,
shows those priorities.
They treasure their cruiser more than people's lives.
Absolutely. Hey, Chris, thank you very much for your call this morning.
Thank you, guys.
And I want to say, coming up on KABU, we have today at 9 o'clock, Marv will be here with Veterans Voice, dealing with health issues and vets of the vets after the effects of war. And, you know, I just absolutely, I flubbed that sentence five ways to Sunday. I'm going to try it again. At 9 o'clock, Veterans Voice deals with health issues of vets and the after effects of war. At 10 o'clock, Valley Views talks to the director of STEM Academy at Oregon State University about efforts to provide access to science and technology to underrepresented groups. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 o'clock, From the Vault celebrates the 50th anniversary of the Pacifica Radio Archives recordings from 1968 with Martin Luther King, Joan Baez, Muhammad Ali, and Allen Ginsberg, and so much more, really. All of these KABU programs have one thing in common, and that is they are made possible by your support. If you would like to become a member, please take this moment right now, go to kboo.fm and click donate. Remember, it's really no better time to support people's media than today. Think about all of the conversations we have had and all those that we will need to have coming right up. So with all that, let's go ahead and talk to another caller. Let's talk to Jimbo. Good morning. You're on the air, Jimbo.
Oh, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you for your wonderful program. On the point that the gentleman made about where the officers live, I think that's a super important point. I know the person who may become the new risk manager, and I suggested to her we need to have an ordinance that says whenever we have riot control needs, whatever, that the officers have to be taken from within Portland first. By all stretch of imagination, that makes sense. San Francisco did that because they had a big problem there, and they still have problems, but they have largely made their police force live within their county, which is barely bigger than their city. But in any case, I think that's a very important point.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too.
And one other minor point, maybe the Willamette Week may publish my little article, but when I was in South Korea, I saw the students be attacked over and over by the dictatorship's stormtroopers, and then they got into throwing these shooting projectiles, which were more like grenades, but then some of the students figured out that a first baseman's a mitt was a real good thing to have.
Yeah.
Catch them, and they throw the mitt back, and that didn't go well for the stormtroopers, and that was the end of that dictatorship.
Interesting point. Thanks very much, Jimbo. And 503-231-8187. We are running out of time, so we will be... we got about 10 minutes of show left.
Well, I want to mention something that Dan Handelman said on the air recently on the KBOO News, to the point that the probably the real reason the police support these right-wing rallies is because this is enforcement for the powers that be. I mean, the state doesn't want to see labor moving forward, doesn't want to see progressive politics, doesn't want to see the hierarchy that includes crushing people of color economically changed. And one of the good ways to do that is to maintain the system of intimidation, an aspect of the oppression that people of color feel and that GLBTQIA people feel, a very important aspect. And by, you know, backing up and by pretending that these terrorist groups are simply mainstream or more mainstream than the protesters, pretending that they're just here to express their opinions instead of to continue their armed intimidation, they can keep that, they can keep this hierarchy in place, which is bad enough. I mean, we've already got 80% of the U.S. population living paycheck to paycheck. And so when you get down to 25% of the poorest people in the United States, we're getting pretty desperate. And then when you increase, when you add the oppression, the 7 times oppression against people of color to that, well, you have a handy, desperate workforce available for any manufacturer or employer at any time, which serves not only as a reserve workforce, but as a terror and as an example against everyone who would dare defy their boss, against anyone who would dare form a union and actually look out for their own democratic rights. It works pretty well.
Absolutely. Let's go ahead and get Kathy on the air. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. I had a couple comments this morning. One of them was, I find it pretty outrageous that Outlaw would go on the Lars Larson show. What's that all about?
It is curious. I know that we've actually, before this article broke, several people from KBOO have been trying to contact Outlaw to have an interview with her here on KBOO, including our morning news and public affairs director. And she has her office has not returned any of those calls. So add that to the narrative. Oops. We're sorry, Kathy. You seem to have gone away. Yeah, so add that to the narrative. What does it mean when she does grant interviews to the most reactionary right-wing talk show in Portland, but they don't bother returning calls to KBOO?
For example, here's what's on his front page. Dr. Peter Laufer, the question, why are newspaper anti-Trump op-eds cheered when Sinclair editorials were vilified? Of course, we know the answer to that already. Sinclair editorials were vilified because they were a violation of the editorial freedom of every station that is owned in that chain. And the anti-Trump op-eds were generated by people's actual collective concerns and came out from the editors themselves. So that's why the newspaper anti-Trump op-eds were cheered. But it seems unfair to someone with a fascist attitude like Lars Larson.
Yeah, I mean, you know, is it just low intelligence or is it the active fascist promotion? It's hard to say with Lars. Let's go ahead and talk to Kathy again. Welcome back, Kathy.
Well, hello.
Hello.
I watched from the other night about the far-right people who are embedded in police departments.
Yeah.
That scares the you-know-what out of me.
Oh, yeah.
How could we go about finding out, even in our own area, which of our police department
we know that Portland
are part of the right wing?
Right. We know that Portland has had a Nazi sympathizer on the force for a long time. In fact, I believe that he was actually discharged a while back and then reinstated by orders of the police union. And that is something to absolutely know that he's not the only one, right? So that's Captain Mark Krueger. Right. And so that has been going on. We've known about him for years. So who else? It's a good question and definitely one that needs to be addressed. So we know we have at least one person that likes to play Nazi dress up and honor Nazi holidays, but says he's not really a Nazi. He just likes the costume. I don't really understand.
And I know at least two cops who'd beat me for being trans.
Right. So we know that this exists. And what does that say about police culture? I think it says everything we need to know.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling back, Kathy. So we do just have 4 minutes left. Good morning, Martin.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks for having this program. And I know you're not allowed to promote political candidates on your show.
Yeah, but you can.
I would like to promote one myself if you're interested helping reform the Portland Police Department. Please vote for Joanne Hardesty in November. She's a good one, and she used to be on KBOO.
Right, but we have a policy that says that you cannot be a candidate and on the air at the same time because of FCC law. But I thank you very much for your call, Martin. That's thank you for your suggestion. And with that, we will, we have just a couple minutes. We have a couple minutes and one more person we can squeeze in. Good morning, Jim. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, the question was raised is what should the police have done?
That question did get raised.
I want to point out what happened in Washington, D.C. in this one of this recent confrontations with the Nazis. Turns out I think there were just like a couple dozen of them and a large number of protesters. But watching the videos from that, I was wondering, where's the cops? I couldn't even see them because I was looking for the people in riot gear. That's what I was expecting. But what I saw were cops in just basically regular uniforms, smiles on their faces, because they weren't wearing masks. Now, that's what the cops should be doing.
Right? There is something about showing up as someone that looks like a stormtrooper that is threatening. I'm just going to go ahead and say threatening, especially in communities that have been regularly targeted and beaten by police. That is automatically setting up an us-them strategy, which apparently Outlaw is really fine with and likes, actually, from this interview. I've rarely seen police be so completely out front about being vicious.
Yeah, and I just wanted to point that out because I wish the Outlaw would watch those videos and just to see how, you know, a well-regulated police force.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. I've seen pictures comparing and contrasting D.C.'s police response to Portland's. And visually, man, can't get further apart.
Yep. That's my point.
Right on. Thanks so very much.
Yeah, thank you. I want to comment just real quickly what we're up against when these sort of people come into town. Here's a quote from Brian Breathold, a.k.a. Careless Rex, he told this on his co-host on the anti-Semitic show, The Daily Shoah. How offensive is that? One of the most popular alt-right podcasts, I'm reading from sblcenter.org. If the Proud Boys were pressed on the issue, he said, I guarantee you that like 90% of them would tell you something along the lines of Hitler was right, gas the Jews, end quote.
So there, that's, again, one of the reasons why it's important to counter the Proud Boys. I don't think it's actually effective to ignore evil. I think ignoring evil allows evil to flourish. And if the Proud Boys, if white supremacy, if the demagogue in the White House are not examples of pure evil, I'd be hard-pressed to say what is. So keep on keeping on. And continue to be positively revolting. I'll be back next week. And stay tuned for Veterans Voice.
Respect.
Coming up this morning on KBO Next at 9 o'clock, it's Veterans Voice Radio, deals with the health issues of vets and the after effects of war. At 10, Valley Views talks to the director of STEM Academy at Oregon State University about efforts to provide access to science and technology to underrepresented groups. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, and at 11, From the Vault celebrates the 50th anniversary of the Pacific Radio Archive recordings from 1968. With Martin Luther King, Joan Baez, Muhammad Ali, Allen Ginsberg, and more. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. The Finance Committee meets this month on August 23rd at Cider Riot at 807 Northeast Cooch.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Black on Black Startups from the Ground Up on Saturday, August 18th at King Elementary School in Portland. Black on Black Startups from the Ground Up is focused on Black businesses and Black spaces and is hosted by the 2018 Black Male Achievement Summer Youth Experience Cohort. Again, that's Black on Black Startups from the Ground Up on Saturday, August 18th at King Elementary School, 4906 Northeast 6th in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage underneath Community Events.